You are listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
We will now be taking questions. 2-3 minutes to each person, please. Please, when speaking, introduce yourself. And do feel free to speak in Russian if you prefer. Yes, please. Microphone, please.
Thank you very much for organizing this event and this presentation. My name is Alexey Bogomolov. I represent the International Bank, one of the global banks in the world. Thank you again for this presentation and this book. What I would like to draw attention to the future of this development. I believe what is lacking between Russia and the United States is really cooperation in financial sector. If you look at Russia, there are four strategic major banks operating in Russia. Goldman Sachs, Lenin, Morgan Stanley, and so on. So what we see in the United States, there are none of Russian banks present. There are the many attempts to establish this, but it was not approved. Of course, Russian banking system and financial services are different nowadays and are strong, and they showed this through the crisis, which actually touched US banks as well. So there are really possibilities of cooperation. Cooperation could be established on the joint bank between the United States and Russia.
Excuse me, we'll have a commentary in a session a little bit later.
Question,
please.
Yeah. So my question, when are you going to progress in this? At least to have a working group on financial services within the Commission.
But you will probably have a cluster of questions if you wish.
Okay.
Then,
I have to leave the final.
Oh, okay, please.
And my second observation would be really to start this landmark project of a tunnel under Bering Strait, which is pushed by Russian railways, and this is extremely important for physical, I would say, cooperation between Russia and the United States and transportation between Russia and the United States and China.
Since Alexei will have to leave, will you be willing to give an answer now?
Okay, well, on the second question, I can tell you actually that Ambassador Byerly met today with Director Yakunin of Russian Railways, and I know they had a lot of subjects to discuss. I expect this actually probably was one, and as always, it's a question of ideas needing money behind them, but it's obviously a wonderful idea that someday we will have that physical link across the Bering. On the question of financial sector involvement, I think that's a good example. I mean, the Commission does not encompass everything. Obviously, it's impossible ever to encompass everything, but the financial sector, I would agree, is an area where in the future we could have some expansion. It is an area, I think, to be honest with you, that was in crisis when we set up the Commission, and that was happening at the same time that the G20 was being created. And my personal assessment, I don't actually know the answer to your question, is that all the focus at that point was on getting out of the crisis, getting the G20 going. So our Treasury Department, the Russian Finance Ministry, probably were not thinking commission at that point. But I think down the road, that is a good example of an area. Ask Ambassador Malian if he agrees.
Я не исключаю, что у нас есть группа по развитию деловых связей и торгово-экономическим отношениям, хотя она руководится госпожой Медведевой с нашей стороны, с американской стороны, Локом, министром торговли США. Там, в общем, обсуждаются многие вопросы. И в работе этой группы участвуют также представители наших общественных деловых профессиональных организаций, и Шохин, там, и Деловая Россия, и Торговая палата, и так далее, которые, в общем-то, вбрасывают те проблемы, которые интересуют то или иное сегмент их участников. Поэтому я не исключаю, что эта проблема может быть обсуждена в рамках комиссии. Что касается туннеля под Беринговым проливом, идея интересна, она, в общем-то, обсуждается, но просто для вашего сведения, даже вот, казалось бы, такая абсолютно невинная, добрая, хорошая мысль создать парк-заповедник Берингия в этом регионе, ну, так, на ваше сведение, она сталкивается с очень большими трудностями. И не со стороны федеральных властей, а скорее всего, и как ни странно, со стороны людей, которые, казалось бы, в первую очередь будут пользуются плодами вот этого парка, местного населения, как с нашей стороны, но в большей степени со стороны Аляски, американцев, инуитов, которые живут на Аляске, потому что они поступают не очень в пользу нарушения их привычного образа жизни, опасаются, что будет нарушена экология и тому подобное. Поэтому проект прекрасный, но как реально, так сказать, его осуществить, не только финансово, технически, но и с точки зрения учета общественного мнения, это, в общем, довольно сложно проделать.
Пожалуйста.
Кстати, группа по деловому сотрудничеству проводит свое заседание в Москве 7-8 апреля.
Спасибо. Виктор Кувалдин, МГУ, Ефон Горбачев. Но прежде всего я хочу сказать, что мы ждем у нас в университете вице-президента Байдена. Вот как раз передо мной лежит программа его визита, как мы уже встречали. Я думаю, что это очень интересная программа. И мы, конечно, заинтригованы, особенно учитывая характер этого правительства деятельности, что же именно он скажет. Но мой вопрос к послу Малавьяну. У него в его очень интересном докладе было одно заинтриговавшее меня замечание следующего плана, что взаимодействие с американской стороной, ну, надо отдавать трезво смотреть на все происходящее и понимать, что до тех пор, пока нет сигнала из Белого дома, настоящего взаимодействия, скорее всего, нет. Меня почему это затыкало? Люди, которые постарше, они, наверное, помнят, что вообще это до боли знакомая нам система. Это как раз то, что мы называли советской системой. До тех пор, пока не было сигнала со Старой площади, с ЦК КПСС, у нас ничего не творилось. Вот в связи с этим у меня как раз вопрос к Малавьяну, поскольку он очень хорошо может оценить эту иронию истории. А как себя чувствует сейчас российская сторона, взаимодействуя с такой вот вертикально интегрированной и жестко организованной системой?
Ну, что касается официальных участников таких обменов, я имею в виду представителей ведомств и так далее, на рабочем и официальном уровне, поскольку оно происходит уже взаимодействие с партнерами соответствующих американских структур и ведомств, оно проходит, в общем-то, без какого-либо, без каких-то там трений, препятствий и прочего. Тем более, как я уже сказал, есть добро. Да? Что касается представителей наших деловых кругов, ну, на то они, в общем-то, и деловики, для того, чтобы проходить свои ходы-выходы. Но должен признаться, что нередко они обращаются за политической поддержкой и в Министерство иностранных дел, и в посольство, и, в общем-то, у них бывают определенные проблемы, которые мы помогаем в силу нашего налаженного диалога с американскими коллегами решать. Иногда успешно, иногда безуспешно. Для этого, кстати, и существует вот эта группа по деловому сотрудничеству, которая вот будет в апреле собираться, на которой рассматриваются такие случаи. Но что я еще хочу сказать из моего опыта? Я думаю, что мой друг господин Рубин не обидится. Хорошо помню 90-е годы, начало 90-х годов, когда я в это время был старшим советником в Вашингтоне, в посольстве. Значит, ну, там были различные ожидания, проекты. Ну, в общем-то, поменялась в целом атмосфера наших отношений и прочее. В общем-то, мы рассчитывали на нечто большее. И, в частности, там были всякие, скажем, некоторые ограничения по, ну, чисто такого бытового характера, скажем, на поездки по стране, там режим пребывания и прочее, который был установлен американскими властями. И это касалось не только, скажем, посольства, но и в целом на общие отношения между нами и американцами. Тогда, в общем, мне было сказано, когда, в общем, задавались вопросы, мне сказали, это вам надо меняться, ребята. Это у нас все в порядке.
Спасибо. Что-то добавить?
I would just add one brief comment about the question of the green light. I actually think, going back to my earlier comments, one of the positive parts of this experience has been to see that after that initial blessing, after that initial green light from the top in both systems, it is not my impression that officials at lower levels are constantly looking over their shoulder and checking, is it okay with the boss? You know, am I in danger if I get too enthusiastic about cooperating, if I come up with new ideas? There are a lot of people moving ahead without checking because they do have that overall green light, which is very important. So I think in terms of the culture of the relationship and the culture in both systems, there has been a positive change.
You are absolutely right. I would like to agree with you and say that there is much more what happens between our countries. And we always try to track them, but it's impossible. True? Mm-hmm.
True.
I just want to add...
This is very good, by the way.
I just want to add something here, not to be raining on this parade, but after all, my role as an analyst is to... sure that we're talking about reality, and I'm not totally sure it's fair to say that that officials are not constantly looking over their shoulders, because in my experience in trying to work with officials, now granted I'm coming from the outside, that is still there, and so I don't think we've overcome that. I think that what Ambassador Malayan says about the United States, and I would quite frankly turn it right around and say it's true about Russia, is true, which is when there's a clear message from the White House, from either White House or from the Kremlin, it helps a lot. But it is still absolutely true that on a smaller level, on a more informal level, the way that some of these commission activities that I have seen work still looks like a mini version of the international negotiations of the kind that's pictured here or that traditionally happened in this relationship. The other point that I would make is there's a huge problem, and this is connected to the issue that I brought up earlier of being able to talk not only about the things that we already agree on, but the things that we know we disagree on, and that is the freedom of the private sector and of civil society to cooperate with one another. So when I, as an American who is outside of the government, go to a Russian counterpart and seek to do something jointly, is that Russian counterpart always looking over his shoulder to ask, will I be safe if I do this? And talking about what are the situations, what are the circumstances that enable more effective cooperation. Yes, visas are important, but it's not only visas. It's a broader atmosphere. And when we talk about modernization, or when we talk about sort of, strengthening our two respective societies economically, politically, socially, we also have to be talking about that issue. And I don't think that that's there yet.
Next question, please.
Yes, please. The Utkin Institute of World International Relations, Russian Technical Sciences. I have a question exactly on this issue of a different view of the civil society and how human rights are respected. Not only about what you said about this right now, but also about what you mentioned on that in your book, where you write about this working group on civil society issues, and you partly blame the problems that exist in this group on co-presidents of this working group, which are quite well-known experts and administrators, what they can achieve currently is not satisfactory as far as I see, and you blame it on this difference in views. But I have another idea of what is the problem here, and I would like to find out if you agree with me or not. I think that the problem is that we discuss this human rights and civil liberties issue on a very general level. The thing that happens usually is that American counterpart comes and say, you have problems with civil liberties. You have problems with human rights. And you should make everything all right. And the result is that the Russian side says, yes, we know we have problems, we are working on that. And here the misunderstanding arises and nobody does nothing in the end. But if we leave aside this general level and if we go down to the level of legislation, if we look through some of the probably doubtful Russian legislation pieces and the US legislation that could create problems for Russians, and try to change some minor things, and then we can provide some progress there. Do you believe that this way is possible to follow, or is it just too naive to be listening?
Okay, Sergei, I really appreciate the question. That's a very important question. What I said in the report is basically that there's some irony and there is some complexity or inertia, which is created by the fact that you basically have two people who are famous for their disagreement on the issue of human rights and civil liberties, who are co-chairing the Commission on Human Rights and Civil Liberties. Now, that could be, this is Mike McFaul, who, among other things, was one of my professors at Stanford and is a famous advocate of kind of openness and democracy, and then you have Mr. Surkov is his co-chair. So these are not two people who see eye to eye on most things. The positive version of that is, well, at least they know where they stand. You know, they're not doing a sort of diplomatic dance around each other. The negative version is, unfortunately, the result is that working group does not really deal with the issue that most of us, when we say civil society, we kind of think, okay, this is about democracy and sort of human values and things like that. And really, that working group is not doing that. It's doing visits to prisons so that, you know, prison conditions should be improved, and it's talking a little bit about adoption. You know, these things are important, but some of these are consular issues. Maybe I'm not sure what the official categories are. They're not dealing with the issues that I mentioned in my comments earlier, the things we know that we have disagreements about. Now, as to your suggestion, I don't know, maybe you read a publication that I had recently in English about a month and a half ago where I made the argument for an American audience to do exactly that. I completely agree with you that basically it is not effective for the United States to do either one of two things. One of them is sort of classic blunt instrument linkage, which is we come to Russia and we say, we're really upset with your human rights situation and democracy. We think you should be a better democracy, and until you are, we're not going to work with you on the WTO. Right? We know that doesn't work. Not only because Russia just doesn't react very well to, as you said, general criticism. They say, okay, well, we've been doing this for 20 years. Give us a chance. You know, you're 200 plus years old. But also because the linkage part doesn't work. You can simply say, okay, well, then we won't do this deal with you. Sorry, we won't cooperate. My alternative to that, I think, very much is along the lines of what you were saying, which is we need to choose specific examples of cases that are important to Americans specifically. So the example, historically, I am a historian. I believe, you know, we can learn more from history if we pay attention to it, quite frankly, than from anything that you hear around you today. In the 1980s, we had representative lists, people that the United States wanted to be allowed to emigrate freely from the Soviet Union. And it worked. Those people were allowed to emigrate. Why? Well, the Soviet authorities, first of all, understood why the United States wanted that. You know, we had domestic political interests in seeing that happen. We imposed Jackson-Vanik, which I realize is a painful example today because it's shameful even, and I agree with that, but for a very specific reason, which the Soviet side understood, and it worked. And I think if we were to choose issues that had direct bearing on American interests and explain why, and make those issues as specific as possible. For example, you know, expropriation of property that belongs to American investors or companies that have American investors, and the inability of those investors then to go to court and get a fair hearing and get their property back. I mean, that's something that clearly has a concrete interest at stake for the United States. And I think that that's something, of course, that is tied to the values issue. It's tied to corruption. It's tied to transparency. But it's something I think that the Russian side would understand better. And I think, you know, on our side, we could talk probably about increased enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which allows us to get at the issue of corruption. I'm not sure that I would want to, like, pick apart Russian legislation, because it's very often not about what's in the legislation, but it's, you know, what the enforcement is, what is the reality. But certainly I would just generally say that we need more specificity in our dialogue about, you know, human rights and democracy issues. And incidentally, if at some point that could happen in a new working group of the commission, which is more accurately titled the Human Rights and Democracy Working Group, great. Keep civil society. Do another working group. You can have 50 of them, as far as I care.
May I just mention that the group of civil society, chaired by McFaul and Zhukov, was created with a goal not to concentrate on issues which a priori divide us. They have chosen four subjects which are in the same way, in the same magnitude, affecting both societies. Illegal migration, prison conditions, children issues, children pornography, exploitation, sexual, and fourth area, corruption.
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 Any government, yeah.
And we have created four subgroups, chaired by leaders or, let's say, representatives of official departments of each government on this subject, on these issues, and with a lot of participation of a non-governmental organization from both sides. And it really helps to find solutions and recommendations which will go forward to the superiors, to the executive power to implement that. It was the design of this group.
Thanks. I would like to echo that and say I absolutely agree your idea about tackling very specific issues is the right way forward. There are some other recent examples where that has been successful. One of them has been our negotiation on a new agreement on adoptions. And that was an issue, it's a perfect example of a real problem, where at the end of the day we agreed and the Russian side agreed we had a problem. We had thousands of Russian kids being adopted in the U.S., and we had an unacceptable number of bad experiences. And the agreement is not yet signed, although we're very close, so I don't want to give it bad luck. But I think this has been a very pragmatic example, and both sides have been flexible and compromised because they had the same goal, which was to find homes for the kids. Another example on corruption, which we have been working on in support of Russia's accession to the OECD, there is anti-bribery legislation that is required, and American experts have been working with the Duma at the request of the chairman of the Duma to craft that legislation based on our experience, because we have probably the most experience with anti-bribery legislation. That's a very specific goal. Now, I agree with Matt that legislation is not necessarily accomplishment at the end of the day. The legislation has to be carried out, but that's a very positive thing. Just briefly on the question of Zhukov, McFaul and civil society and all that, you know, I think realistically this is not the Volshebnaya Presidentskaya Komissiya. I mean, we can't fix everything. There are disagreements that continue. We disagree on Georgia. We disagree on things that won't easily go away. President Obama, when he was a candidate for office and since he's been president, has said very clearly and I think in emphasizing the difference with his predecessor, we talk to people we disagree with. Disagreeing with someone is not a reason not to talk. As a matter of fact, it's one of the key reasons you want to talk. And so, yes, we know, as Matt said, we have two co-chairs here on this commission who have very different worldviews. We think getting them in the same room periodically, having that exchange at the end of the day is useful and positive.
We'll probably take two more questions. Yes, please.
So there was a lot of CMMO Institute of World Economy and International Relations, Russian Academy of Sciences. Every new administration, both in Russia and the United States, trying to build new relationship, trying to establish a new climate for a dialogue. But each attempt in this case, it meets pitfalls, especially if you're connected with the time gap of thinking. Because every time we're trying to rebuild our relations in different spheres, we're trying to establish dialogue and trying to resolve short-term problems and medium-term problems. And what about long-term perspective? What about trying to build and to establish long-term dialogue and long-term goals? Because when we mark long-term goals, we can and long-term targets for our relations, for our collaboration, cooperations, such as Cities of Polo project, Mr. Malayan had mentioned, and other projects in science, in space research, and in other spheres, many spheres, we can see the mark points for moving forward. And we can, by this point, we can reduce some misunderstandings and some problems long-term period if we see these goals. Thank you. Do you want to mark them in the future?
Just quickly on that, Peter. I agree with you. I actually think that too many long-term goals, long-term, I think, ambitious goals is what you're getting at. Long-term, sort of, very. Yeah, I think too many of them have been abandoned because of realism or pessimism, however you look at it, or just quite frankly, you know, negative experiences like 2008. I mean, that's still pretty fresh in people's memories, and it's sort of hard to imagine. Doing a complete reversal of our positions enough and consistently enough over time that we're going to build some, you know, great ambitious joint project. I mean, you know, you heard the reaction to the question about the tunnel, right? I'm not going to go to the bank with that reaction. You know, that's sort of we'll think about it. To be quite honest, I think. I don't think that either side at this point is prepared to make a declaration that the United States and Russia will remain engaged with each other with the level of energy and to the degree that they are at this moment in 2011. I mean, it's a high-risk statement if you think about it for a politician to say, one of the accomplishments of my administration is going to be, we will build a bridge between Alaska and Siberia. You know, politicians have gotten made fun of in the United States for all of time. For saying that Seward's Folly, Alaska, was going to be the great accomplishment. You can imagine a politician really going down in flames for setting a high goal and not being able to achieve it. So I think tactically where we are with the commission right now, since 2009 fall or spring 2010 when it really got going, is it's trying to sort of throw a few concrete accomplishments down on the table so that people, you know, get invested enough in this relationship and it has a little bit of momentum. I don't think it's anywhere near at this point being able to pick an astronomical goal and get there, but that's my view. My colleagues may have.
One more question, please. Sorry, ladies first leave on the 8th of March.
I am Anshul, I'm an intern at the Carnegie Foster Center. I have a question for Matthew. You mentioned that it's better to have START Treaty and the AFPAC agreement, etc., outside the purview of this commission. But you also mentioned that this commission has very set goals, you know, very clear KPIs, very clearly ways of investing the stakeholders in it. So why is it that you feel that it's better to have those treaties, which I think have bigger impact on the overall relationship outside the purview of this commission?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's something that I was kind of skeptical about at first. And I have to say I was won over to some degree by talking with my colleagues in government, and it's basically the idea that maybe it's a little related to what I just said to Fyodor's question, and that is that this commission represents a relationship which is not strong enough at this point that it can necessarily endure huge political fights taking place in the context of the commission working groups. So basically, I think what might happen if you take a very political issue like the New START Treaty, and you may remember how political that became in the United States, and you attach it to the commission, which already sounds like a bureaucracy to Americans. Americans really hate the notion of a bureaucracy. I think Russians probably do too. We just express it a lot more. And I think there was a danger that if, you know, Gadamuller and Antonov were sitting across the table from each other and it said commission on the table, then everything negative that came out about those negotiations, and a lot of negative stuff did, would reflect badly on the commission, and it might have in some ways killed the commission, you know, in its infancy. That's my view.
Just to add that the issues of agreed over three has been discussed constantly in the steering group, which is chaired by Deputy Minister Ryabkov and Undersecretary Bill Burns. Constantly. During all the meetings which we had during last week.
We shall proceed to the commentary part of our session, but please.
Thank you very much. Very small and maybe not very serious question to Mr. Rozhansky. Thank you very much for your excellent presentation. And the question is very simple. What is your opinion, or maybe some idea, how long the Obama Military Commission may exist?
How long?
How long it may exist? May exist.
Hours. Yeah.
Look at
my crystal ball.
We like to make predictions at Carnegie Mellon.
No, yeah, it's that's, you know, like when you join a think tank, they give you, you know, they give you your office and your computer and your business cards and then a clear instruction, which is never make predictions. So I can't say, but I would say if you look at the characteristics that I've described that are in the report and you compare it to past commissions, it is much better equipped because of its flexibility and because of how much it's gotten done, how quickly. Okay, those are really good signs, but there are bad signs too. Okay, there is a lot of what I would call like dark clouds and warning signs on the horizon for the relationship. I mentioned some of those, but also for the commission. So what I would say is a lot depends on 2012. You know, who is going to be the Russian candidate? You know, if it is conceivable, of course, that Obama would lose in 2012, and then, you know, not only would I have to retitle the report, which probably should have been the Bilateral Presidential Commission and 5 decades of U.S.-Russia dialogue, but in fact, it is totally possible. If you look at the Republican candidates right now, the putative Republican candidates, I would say not a single one of them, maybe with one exception, would support something like this. They would think it's a complete waste of time, and I would expect them to throw it out the door. But again, that's as far as I'll go with predictions.
Your commentary is... Oh, sorry. Your commentary is now, please. 5 minutes.
And, or we can end if there's nothing else to say.
Who would like to take the floor? Yes, please. Since we're recording, would you like to introduce yourself again, please?
Yes, Zagyutin, Institute of World Economic and International Relations. I would like to raise this issue of transparency that actually was raised by Mr. Rogan, that you are trying to use social media like Facebook and YouTube, but in my opinion, the problem is that, part of the problem at least, is that Russian bureaucracy, also in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, still does not understand how important that is for the success of the project. They see it more like a decoration, like something that should come at the lowest priority, probably if we have time and financial resources for that. And that is still the case even when our president, Dmitry Medvedev, is so much willing to use all new technologies, but still, with the Presidential Commission, if you search for the information on it on the internet, you find it spread all over the internet, but sometimes, even when an important meeting of a working group takes place, you can hardly find anything on it in advance, and afterwards you can hardly find a press conference or something translated by mass media. And that is a problem, because if people don't see any kind of result, they don't believe in the eventual success of this project. So I think that this should be a priority, and you should try to make public everything that can be made public. I mean, it often happens with this sort of organisms
that people hide something not because they are willing to hide, but because they are not investing enough resources to put it online, put it available to public. And that is where some significant progress can be made, according to my estimates. And another thing where you can get a bit closer to public, I guess, is this this issue that was mentioned by Ms. Marlen. I mean, it's probably a bit too early to speak about visa-free travel. But anyway, I mean, in relations between Russia and the European Union, visa facilitation and possible visa-free travel is one of the priorities. Probably it will not decide. It will not be decided next year. But at least people speak about it, and they try to do something about it. And what we have is visa facilitation agreement. It may be not satisfactory, but that's the first step. And with the United States, we have nothing of this kind. Some people say that now it's a bit easier to get a U.S. visa, just because kind of attitude towards Russian applicants is more favorable, some objective estimation. And the thing is that on the official level, we don't have even the goal of the visa-free travel set. Probably it could be done, it could be made one of the priorities, and that would make people much more interested in what the Presidential Commission does.
May I just...
Yes.
You know, I would like to speak on behalf of my American colleagues. Presidential Commission has created a website in the United States. There's a special website of Presidential Commission. Maybe it could be expanded, or maybe it might have more materials. But I'm always very envious when I see when I have to use it. We do understand the necessity and importance of such a tool. But unfortunately, it's financing, it's a question of personnel, many, many issues. Politically, everybody says, yes, of course, it should be done. But how to implement it technically? But my American colleagues in the State Department and White House have achieved that. And they have opened it a last summit, a June last summit in Washington. June last year, right? As far as visa issues concerned, I think the present political conditions, I mean internationally, it is even not theoretically feasible to raise this issue. It's my private point of view.
If I could just add briefly, I agree with Ambassador Malian on resources. Thank you for the praise for our website, but I think we would acknowledge it's not up to date sufficiently. In deciding not to have a secretariat and deciding not to have a big group of people running the commission, we also decided to have very few resources and very few, little staff. So this is a challenge for us, but your point is absolutely correct. On visas, I am optimistic there will be good news this year on visas in Russian and American, in the Russian-American relationship context. It will not be visa-free travel, certainly not at this point. But I think in terms of liberalization, there will be some positive news. We are working on it very actively. The only other point I would just add, semi-humorously, in answer to Ambassador Malian's comment about visas, 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 from the American perspective, it would be registration, registration, registration. So,
wait. So I have to just add something really quick on the can't tell if it's on or not, on the website and communication issues. First of all, there should be a Russian website. I mean, I'm probably the only person in the world who found that really, really frustrating, but there are probably some people who find it mildly frustrating. And second of all, the American website, you know what, I came around to the belief, I first thought, oh, the commission should be mentioned all the time. You know, every time we do any activity, counter-narcotics, blah, 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 mention the commission. Actually, I don't think it's that important, because I don't think the average person really cares if it happens by the commission or just happens. But what I do think is, when you go online to Google or to find out more information, you find out, oh, there was a U.S.-Russia, you know, dialogue about environmental issues. There was a dialogue about adoption issues, prison issues. If you're someone in civil society who has maybe an organization, an NGO that works on those issues, or that has a personal experience that you want to share on those issues, you should be able to go online and find out. There's a commission. This is the forum in which those issues are being discussed. And click, how can I get involved? And not just have a message that goes into the black box of the comments to the State Department. And we know where those go, okay? And I've said this, this is in the report. Like, it's ridiculous that a commission, several of the working groups of which deal with e-government, does not actually set the precedent for e-government and compare it even to other government websites that exist in the United States or in Russia. It's like it's stuck in 1996. And I know that, by the way, because I read the archives from 1996. The Gorchin and Mirden Commission had an almost identical website.
96 website?
Yeah. Actually, look at the Clinton archives.
We're running a little late, so I suggest to have two more commentaries and then probably remarks and conclusion by our panel members.
I don't need to.
Who would like to take the floor? So, very good. So then, would you like to say some final words?
Thank you very much for that.
So, I would like to thank you all for being here on the Friday evening. And unlike what Matt has said earlier, there are people, as you see, who care, and many of them.
Thank you.
So, I think we do believe that Russian-American relations matter, that they can should be done better, that it's a good thing that the reset has been working, and that it does benefit both the international agenda and the domestic situation. So thank you very, very much. I would like to congratulate Matt again on the report and to wish many happy returns to the commission.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.